Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by PagerDuty. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
As a far-flung, multi-component department, Homeland Security has lots of computer applications to keep track of and keep running at full performance. For an update, I spoke with the Deputy Executive Director of the DHS Headquarters IT Operations Directorate, Dustin Getz. And let's begin with the architecture of the operation you're in. There's headquarters IT, and then I guess there's component IT, because DHS is this big federated bunch of components. So maybe let's start with what you do, what your operation does versus the components, and then we'll get into who owns what applications.
So at headquarters, we have one organization called IT Operations, and within IT Operations, we provide two major services. We act as the CIO for the management zone, providing endpoints, services, and application delivery to the CXOs of DHS headquarters. So your secretaries, all of your CX positions, and we make sure that they're up and running. In addition to that, we also have an enterprise mission where we supply enterprise continuity and connectivity to all of the components. And they, to get out to the internet and to perform their mission, go through us. And that's mostly for reporting and regulatory requirements so that we have purview into what's going on at a larger level. And from an enterprise perspective, we can enforce cybersecurity policies, network operation, availability, so on and so forth. So those are our two missions that we manage simultaneously.
And give us a sense then of the applications that your operation is responsible for.
We have the full spectrum of applications, applications that provide business logistics, which would include your email, word processing, spreadsheet type of stuff, anything that you would see as a standard load on a PC for user support, all the way to cloud hosting environments across the enterprise for DHS components where they can host their mission critical applications down at one of our data centers in Stennis. And we also provide cloud hosting service through Azure and AWS. So it's done on a local basis as well as enterprise. We also provide enterprise cybersecurity, enterprise network operations, and our other components within OCIO provide CDO data framework and architecture. CTO provides that standard enterprise architecture, but specific to our organization, we're focused primarily on mission delivery applications and continuity of services.
And what about things like HR and finance? Do those go by the components, or are there, you know, department-wide instances of those?
There are department-wide instances, specifically our financial management systems. Those are hosted at the enterprise level, at the headquarters level. Components do manage their own financial management, more budget-related systems that are unique to them and their requirements, but they ultimately do roll up into an enterprise application. HR is the same way. We have our OCHICO organization that provide enterprise services. And our job specifically is to provide the access and the integrity and cybersecurity to those applications. So if you look at it from an end-to-end perspective, we are that middle piece, whereas one end you have the users, the other end you have your application owners, and we're that piece in between that ensures data integrity and security to that application.
All right. And then let's talk about integrity, availability, performance, you know, aside from the cybersecurity piece, which is also foundational to keeping going. But how do you establish metrics for the services that you provide, since they are enterprise applications in the sense that they are there and also operating at the levels you need them to?
So we start with an SLA. We have to understand what the application is and what the availability requirements are, and that will dictate what type of an environment they're hosted in and what type of continuity is required to maintain their application. There are some applications out there that are lower on the tier and on the service support spectrum. So if something happens to those applications, whether it be loss of network connectivity or the application encounters some issues, we're not so much worried about them. But in other instances where we have to ensure the application is running 24/7, 365, like some applications for Customs and Border Protection, who have to manage to ensure passenger processing, cargo processing, Those are your high availability assets, and we put those in environments where they have facility redundancy, a lot of your utility redundancy, all the way down to the application and diversity. So from an application perspective, you'll have redundant hosts where they fail over, and also you'll have those physically separated so that if one location goes down, you'll be able to fail over to another location. We also have path diversity. If they're hosted in one location, we have multiple vendors providing service to the same location. So if we have a problem with one, we have failover into another one that has completely diverse paths.
Because the applications themselves can run into trouble for whatever high use or buffer overflow or whatever the case might be, a bad patch. But then the same effect for users can occur because of some network or traffic issue that's not the application itself. Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely fair to say. Yep. And we try to cover the broad spectrum. So it should go without saying, we also do a lot of data backup services and disaster recovery. You know, disaster recovery is a big thing for us. We constantly test the ability of doing continuity of operations by, you know, role play, desktop, tabletop exercise. But we also have a big effort every year where we will do some things and actually prohibit paths so that we can see how well we manage the response.
Therefore, there's a big monitoring and watching component for all of these handoffs that go between the user and wherever the original hosting is, which could be some distance away. How do you get your handle on all of the input and all of the alerts and all of the messaging that happens overlaying operations so that you know when something's really going on and when you can maybe not worry about something?
So our mission at DHS headquarters has grown significantly, and around 4 years ago, we identified the need to consolidate network and cyber operations together. 4 years ago, we developed an organization called the Network Operations Security Center, and they consolidated it probably around 13 to 14 different network and cybersecurity operations into one organization for that exact purpose. We had siloed operational centers, and as they encountered problems, they weren't being handed off or escalated appropriately. So in constructing the NOSC, we were able to find that one organization that has command and control across the environment that's specific to headquarters, but also extends all the way out to the components, and they work closely with the components to ensure that we're maintaining mission operations. So when something happens in one of the various enclaves, that one single organization can look to see if it's a network or a cyber related issue. They can look to see if it's related to a higher level outage with a vendor, a service provider, let's say. And they can also look to see if there are some internal issues that are happening all within a matter of moments. Whereas before, we would have to pick up the phone, escalate the trouble ticket internally to ourselves, and adjust prolonged outages. So we have made significant strides in consolidating these capabilities, and it has been proven that we have been able to reduce our incident response time from minutes, in some cases hours, down to just seconds in some cases, because we have that big picture, or at least a subset of minutes.
And in some cases, can the response be automated? Can it be something that a machine can fix and not necessarily a person?
It can. We're a little immature in that area right now. However, we are looking at implementing AI and ML related tools to help the one and tier two service desks to quickly identify issues. We're looking at some tools that will bring up playbooks based on the symptoms, and they would pilot the technician through a series of troubleshooting steps that will quickly identify whether or not that is the issue. And if it's not the issue, it will help them pivot over to another secondary issue. So we've piloted some of those technologies. The results are fairly positive, still have some work, but we do have some capabilities of incident automation through our SIEM, and that's a collection of data feeds that are coming into a common repository, and we have triggers and alerts set up based on thresholds and based on the type of system that'll help navigate the tier one, tier two tech to a potential problem. So we have some of them online right now, but they're tailored more towards triggers, not the AI and ML, where we'd like to see it go.
Right, because if you just have say, RPA version, robotic process automation, when this or that happens, it has to be precisely the same thing to trigger that. And there's no real self-adaptability in that form of automation.
That's absolutely right. And one of the events that we're trying to prevent is false positives and false negatives. And when you put a lot of that capability into a human technician's hands, you still have a high percentage of error. And so in leveraging ML and AI, you bring that error threshold down significantly, and you're only giving the technician the pertinent data that they need to make a decision based on qualified data.
So therefore, the automation can be in simply narrowing down what's important, and in that way, it leverages people's productivity, but doesn't necessarily mean you have to automate everything.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. We want them to have eyes on glass at the most important events that are triggering and happening right now. And in some cases, before we tune some of the environments, they're being hit with countless alerts and they have to weed through those. And there's a potential for them to miss some events where if we were to use an AI or an ML technology, we wouldn't have to worry about that because the playbooks and the environment are already understood by the technology, and we can just drop and play various environments without really tuning it much.
Dustin Getz, Deputy Executive Director of the Homeland Security Headquarters IT Operations Directorate. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Are your digital operations a well-oiled machine or a tangled mess? Is your end-user experience breaking through or breaking down? Now is the time for an operations intervention. If you need to consolidate software, reduce costs, and build resilience, all you need is PagerDuty's Operations Cloud. It's the essential platform for operating in a complex digital world. Get started at PagerDuty.com today.
Welcome back to our interview with Dustin Getz, Deputy Executive Director of the Homeland Security Department's Headquarters IT Operations Directorate. I'm Tom Temin. Our topic is monitoring applications and keeping them operating in tip-top shape. And when someone is required to fix something, how do you know, how does the system identify, hey, Charlie, this is your job to fix? How do you kind of adjudicate among all the people working in the NOSC?
So right now we have a lot of those feeds coming in. Whatever feeds are coming in are assigned to an organization. And it could either be a service desk organization that's focused on the end user or the NOSC organization that's focused on the larger enterprise based on how the triggers are set up. So if you have a wireless access point issue, the system will automatically alert and know to route that over to a service desk individual. Whereas if you have a 10 gig circuit go down, it knows to alert the NOSC. So we have a lot of that capability already programmed into our existing SIEM. It does take a lot of work to get those set up properly. And if they're not set up properly, you could miss something.
And if people are, I don't know, away or they're on lunch break or they're on vacation, is there a way for the system to switch over to the next available person? In other words, is there an effective phone tree type of capability in there?
Not necessarily, but we do have distribution lists that we leverage for incoming alerts. And then we also use those to notify application owners, network, that various knocks at the components. So we're never in a situation where we're single threaded and we would miss an alert or we would put ourselves at risk of sending an alert out without knowing that it's going to someone that's going to be responsive. So we're really good at making sure people have eyes on glass and are able to respond in a timely manner. Again, a lot of that is dictated and defined by service level agreements that we have to maintain as a service provider to our government partners.
And looking at the risk that outages pose or the risk of outages themselves, do you have a strategy for over time trying to reduce risk in the operations that you're responsible for? Because it is mission critical.
We are always looking for new ways, innovative ways of refining our environment. And that's not necessarily an environment thing. It's also a training and personnel matter. So we work closely with our commercial partners to look at the environment, identify how we can do things better, both through technology and through training. I would say if we ever stop doing that, then we're all going to be in trouble because technology changes so fast. It wouldn't be well for us. But thankfully, we have great commercial partners that are always on the lookout for new capabilities and new ideas. We also have internal teams. We call them the Future State Technology Team that evaluates technologies and capabilities. And when they find something based on our requirements, they'll bring it to the system owner or the executive and present ideas and options to them to consider, not only for implementation, but also from a budget purpose. We have to know way in advance what kind of technologies we want to implement. So,
and in the NOSC, how much of that activity is done by federal employees? How much contractor support do you have? And how does all the work break down between the two?
So I will say that we have bolstered our government oversight on a lot of our core functions. We do partner with industry to help augment some of the work that we're doing. Exact numbers, we have a sufficient amount on both sides to be able to cover the mission, and we are in a better place now than we have ever been. But it is truly a partnership between industry and federal staff, and they work very well together. I will say that federal employees have a tendency, or not a tendency, but we put federal employees in more of an oversight position, not so much as technical, but there are some core positions that we have to maintain technical oversight on more than management. So for instance, our threat hunting groups and our cyber forensics malware analysis are almost exclusively federal employees because we need to have them working with sensitive data, and we don't know where that's going to pivot. So it makes it easier for us to always have government involvement there.
Sure. And what about the cloud? Because as you mentioned early on, you still have DHS data centers, like a lot of agencies, but still much has moved to the couple of big commercial cloud providers that you're using. And how much do you concern yourself with issues that might originate in the cloud itself? Because they are not perfect. They do have outages and they do have situations. And how does that fold into your operations?
I hate to sound like a broke record, but SLAs are key here. We work closely with our hosting providers to establish SLAs that are appropriate for whatever we're hosting. And we have had instances in the past where cloud environments have encountered routing issues and have dropped our service. In almost all of those cases, our SLAs kicked in and they were able to manage to the agreements, providing us with input and feedback on what the issue is and also remediating the issue in time. So again, this goes back to cloud services have redundancy built in them if you take advantage of them. We don't do that in all situations with our applications. We try to leverage those redundancies for high value assets and mission essential systems where appropriate, because that redundancy comes at a cost. So we have a lot of trust and confidence in our commercial providers. And again, those issues that we've had have been resolved appropriately. Nothing to cause us great concern.
Right. I mean, generally things operate pretty well.
Yes, absolutely. Otherwise, we wouldn't be continuing as a software as a service model. We find a lot of cost avoidance in leveraging SaaS services, and we also find a lot of enhanced capabilities in moving to cloud environments.
And that SaaS idea gives rise to something I've been hearing kind of regularly lately, and that is the danger of software updates that SaaS providers do. They send them to you because they've updated the software, which is one of the virtues, is you always have the latest version. But organizations find that when a update comes, it can often break things down the line. Communications, links, calls to databases and so forth somehow get affected by updates. How do you prevent that? Or do you work with software as a service providers to make sure you know when there's an alert coming, when there's an update coming, and some kind of a testing mechanism can be invoked there so that you know it's going to work and not break something?
So there are several things that we do to protect ourselves and to mitigate risk. First and foremost, all the SaaS capabilities that we leverage have been FedRAMP approved. And part of that FedRAMP process is to manage the supply chain for patching and updates. So they're in a trusted environment with established and approved controls for patch management. Our CISO, Chief Information Security Office, also has modified a lot of our contracts to incorporate supply risk chain management into the contracts, ensuring that whatever patches are being developed by a trusted application provider. And even while that's enough, we also take the next step in most cases where we test patches out internally before we implement them on our system. We have test and dev environments that we'll roll the patches out to. We'll see what happens. We'll also monitor the system's behavior to ensure that there isn't malicious logic within the patch. And we'll have a series of checks that we'll run through prior to rolling it out into an operational environment. So we've taken a lot of precautions to prevent malicious activity through patches and supply chain, and we're going to continue to mature that capability as technology continues to progress.
And there are data providers or application services providers sometimes that are looking at this industry-wide and can find out, well, golly, it broke something over here in Japan 12 hours ahead of us or whatever, and maybe alert and say, guess what, this is coming your way in 12 hours, or maybe that's a little overstating it, but there are other users outside of DHS that might have a similar setup that could, in some anonymized fashion, let you know that there's an issue with a particular update on a widely used application?
I would hope that would be the case, and I can't really speak to that for some of the capabilities that we have. Pivoting on that same note, though, we do have service providers that provide to multiple government organizations, and as they see patterns and trends happening within their cybersecurity services or network operation services, we have, again, because of our partnership, they have relayed those issues to us in advance and have allowed us to get ahead of certain things prior to them becoming issues for us because they have seen it in other environments. So the large scale service providers, while sometimes a little more costly, have benefit because of the scope and size of their service. And it's a great opportunity for federal government to take advantage of.
Sounds like the way you have things set up, though, you don't get weekend and overnight calls, personally.
I wish that were the case, but that's not the case. HVAs and MESs are our priority, and when some of those systems go down or if the wrong stakeholder user group are impacted, it is an all-hands-on-deck type of scenario. And that isn't necessarily because they need executive oversight or division director-level oversight. It's because we are here to provide top cover and ensure they're getting the support they need from external organizations. So at that point in time, when we join those calls, we don't become a governing authority on those calls. We become a tool for our subject matter experts to use in a break glass situation. So they're actually fun to participate on because it really shows the command and control and the complexity of some of these events that we manage. And I stand in awe at the capabilities of some of our technicians.
Dustin Getz, Deputy Executive Director of the DHS Headquarters IT Operations Directorate. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by PagerDuty on Federal News Network.
Your organization is modern, so why aren't your operations? Now is the time for an operations intervention. The PagerDuty Operations Cloud is the essential platform for automating and accelerating mission-critical work across your entire organization. Through automation and AI, PagerDuty helps you operate with more resilience, more security, and more savings. Are you ready to transform your operations? Get started at PagerDuty.com today.